there! You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley. I am your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. And I have to admit that Conservation Spotlight has become one of the highlights of my job. It's the opportunity that I get to take time and catch up with our friends and partners in conservation. And today I'm talking with Sam Bartling, Visitor Services Manager with the Willamette Valley National Wildlife Refuge Complex. And she has been in her position for 8 years. I'm excited to introduce Sam with everyone today on Conservation Spotlight to talk about her work and the refuges in the Willamette Valley. So a big welcome to you, Sam.
Thank you for having me, Morgan. I'm thrilled to be here.
I don't know if you remember, but we first met at the unofficial open house at the Ankeny Hill Nature Center. I was just really impressed with how thoughtful and intentional you were with the concept and design of the Nature Center. So I knew any opportunity that came up to partner together, sign me up. And fast forward a year and a half later, and Polk SWCD has been a partner with Winter Wildlife Field Days, which has been so much fun. So I have an idea of how busy of a person you are. And thanks for taking the time to chat with me today. And there are so many different paths that people take in their personal and professional lives. And I always think it's really interesting to find out how people found their way into their niche in conservation work. Share a little bit about yourself and your background and what drove you towards a career in working with people and the environment?
Yeah, no, good question. I think for me, I mean, I grew up backpacking and grew up loving being outdoors. And that was like our family vacations was, you know, car camping when we were little. And then when we were old enough, you know, we had our own packs and we went backpacking. And it was just a great way for our family to be able to like have vacations with without having to spend a lot of money. And so I always really loved it. And I was like, gosh, how could I make a career in this? And I thought, oh, I want to make a career with horses first, because I loved horses too. But then I quickly realized like, oh gosh, you know, horses, I could either be a trainer or it would be a vet. Oh, then I'd be around sick animals all the time. That'd be kind of sad. And I just realized too, I was just like, gosh, I could really make a career out of natural resources. And I did start on the biology side, you know, at Colorado State University and forestry and range ecology. And then as kind of time went on, I started working with refuges. I got an internship with National Wildlife Refuge System, managed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska. Absolutely blew me away. So, and that's where I kind of got the bug, I guess, of just, you know, public land management and wildlife first and these amazing places for wildlife. And I was like, oh, I really would love to work for this agency and do this work. Yeah, I worked at Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge for about 3 years in the public use program. And that's where I kind of got my first taste of kind of the people side of public land management and how those two could be, you know, beyond just the biology and the wildlife side, how the two come together and what that means. And so that started me on kind of this track of, and I went and got my master's in basically community-based management and protected areas is where I focused. Before the social sciences were even really kind of a thing in natural resource management, I already kind of knew it was like, oh, this is really where I want to be. And so got my master's at Cornell and then started public policy for a while. And I went to the Peace Corps in Panama and I worked in nonprofit sector for a while as well as an executive director, and actually found my way to Oregon and worked in conservation easements, found my way back to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service here with the Willamette Valley Refuges and just absolutely love it. I'm a true believer and very passionate about public lands for all and capital A-L-L, like just everyone.
I love that you work so hard to make everything, your events and the public spaces, so inclusive. But for those that may be unfamiliar, can you share a bit about the three refuges that make up the Willamette Valley National Wildlife Complex?
Absolutely. So there's three national wildlife refuges within this complex, kind of managed together: Ankeny National Wildlife Refuge, Basket Slough National Wildlife Refuge, and William L. Finley. And there's a unit of William L. Finley called Snagboat Bend. I always like to mention that one. That's in Linn County, just across the Willamette River, and actually has Willamette River property at that unit. And so all told, it's about a little over 10,000 acres, and it's all within the Mid-Willamette Valley. So we cover four counties. So Linn, Benton, Marion, and Polk County, and there's a lot of communities that we then are really close to. Incredible places, all about an hour apart from each other.
Yeah, and Polk SWCD has two properties in the same wildlife corridor as Basket Slough, and we too are working to provide habitat for threatened and endangered plants and wildlife. Can you share with our listeners what are the overarching priorities for conservation and wildlife on the refuges and in the Willamette Valley in general?
Yeah, so good question. Our big ones are around, so threatened endangered species, listed plants and animals, trying really hard to get those plants and animals off the endangered species list and off the threatened list, you know, so that's all about recovery. It's habitat quality, because you need that along with the populations. So you need the quantity, the populations need to be high enough to be able to be basically deemed recovered. And then you also need the habitat quality, and you need enough populations in a dispersed area all to meet those recovery goals. And we've been doing a really good job of it too. We have some major success stories around this. Of course, Oregon chub was the first fish taken off the ESA list, and that was the first fish ever. And that was our little Oregon chub. And so that's a huge conservation success. The Fenner's blue butterfly too just got downlisted from endangered to threatened. I mean, to go from thinking it was extinct to now getting to be able to downlist it because recovery's been going so well. And Bradshaw's Lomatium got delisted in 2021. So it's working. Like, this network of communities and partners, landowners, refuges, public lands, we're making incredible recovery strides for a lot of these species. Native Willamette Valley habitat types, they're really rare. Those prairies, there's only about 1% left of wet prairie and upland prairie, which is the understory for the oak savanna, another really rare habitat type in the valley. So we work really hard to restore and then maintain those Willamette Valley habitat types. And that does include riparian as well, oak savanna, oak woodland. We do have some mixed forest as well on the refuges. Those are the main ones, the prairies and the oaks, the wetlands. And those are what you see all over the three refuges. A third overarching main conservation goal for us is wintering habitat for a lot of waterfowl. Of course, we were established for the dusky Canada goose. Just has a narrow range. It spends its winters in the Willamette Valley, a little farther north, a little farther south, but mainly Willamette Valley. And then it spends its summers in the Copper River Delta. And it's just that narrow range means its numbers have always been incredibly small. That population hovers around 15,000, and it's now stable. 1964 and 1965 are when these refuges were established, was to set aside those wintering grounds for the dusky in hopes that it could help the population recover. The migratory birds, the wintering wildlife that we have, the ducks that everyone sees in the wetlands every winter, and the geese sounds, you know, thousands of geese. And those large flocks of geese are mostly cackling Canada geese. Really loud flocks of geese are mostly cacklers, and the cacklers are doing just fine population-wise.
So you mentioned that the refuges are surrounded by, you know, private landowners, and you do get a lot of visitors that are interested in supporting the work that the refuges do. So what are some things that people can do in their own backyard to support these conservation goals?
I think a big one is never underestimate the little things that one might do. So everything from, you know, not littering to recycling, turning the lights off, conserving water, all those things really do matter. And I know we've all heard them. We, you know, practice them, we teach them, but it really does matter. A big one I see too is just plant some native plants. That could be in a community garden, a school garden. If you just have a patio or a balcony, they have those fabric pots that work really well. And those native plants are incredible food sources for a lot of pollinators, which then help, of course, produce most of the food that we eat. Those pollinators are incredible. And then just too for like small patches of places to stop and rest and recover for all types of wildlife. That is what that essentially is creating, is like little mini habitats on back porches and patios and yards. And so I think, just I think of the oak tree, and I know a lot of people don't have space for an oak tree in their own backyard, but those oak trees support 250 different species of wildlife, one tree,
Amazing.
and 47 species of birds. And
Wow.
that's just one tree. So if you see a big oak tree just across the landscape, you can just give it like an air five or something. Be like, thanks, oak. You're just doing so much for wildlife. Don't underestimate how big of an impact the little things can have.
Agreed. And selfishly, because I live and work in Polk County, I want to give a little extra love to the less visited Basket Slough. What makes it unique and worth visiting?
Basket Slough is a gem. If you've been to Basket Slough, but just Smithfield Road to the north, now that we're not in Winter Sanctuary, you can access that parking lot and hike in through the north part of Basket Slough and visit the reservoir or go up the backside of Basket Butte and make large networks of trails if you wanted to. So if you're really into the hiking, the summer is a great time to get out and hike and do longer hikes if you wanted to. If you come down Colville Road, stop at the Narrows because the wetlands on either side, Taverner's Marsh, Cackler Marsh, and Cackler Marsh is where we'll be doing the next phase of restoration to Basket Slough. So you'll be seeing some changes over time there as we work to get rid of some of the old water control structures and impoundments and get that historic meandering channel back. And we do know it's working because the beavers are back in Dusky Marsh and very
Woohoo!
active, exactly. And so we're kind of setting the stage for the beavers, and then they're coming in behind us and doing the real heavy lifting. And the next phase of that restoration work will be in Cackler Marsh, and we'll continue it all the way up into the upper stretches, all the way up to Morgan Reservoir. And if you go to the Rich Wadagno Trail, that's the amazing place to hike to see wildflowers. So please do visit in early May when it'll just be a sea of blooms and just a buzz with pollinators of all types. And of course, the Fenner's Blue Butterflies will be flying at that time. And it's a beautiful view at the top of the overlook. And of course, it's the 1,000th recreational trail in the nation. And it's named,
Wow.
isn't that neat? I
Ooh.
know. And it's the Rich Wadagno Trail, of course, named for the, he was the refuge manager at Basket Slough and then,
Okay.
tragically died in Flight 93, but is a hero because of that. His badge was found in the cockpit area of the wreckage from that plane and was one of the passengers of the plane that worked to stop that plane from meeting its destination, which I think potentially could have been the capital. So a hero for the nation and for our refuges. And so we honor him and his story is told along the trail. So please do take a moment to learn about Rich and his story. And of course, the Fenner's Blue Butterfly story is another story at Basket Slough. They thought it was extinct and then it was refound at Basket Slough. And we still have one of the
Yes.
largest populations of Fenner's Blue Butterflies and just downlisted from endangered to threatened, of course. And now Highway 22, there's an overlook there as well. So you can stop there and get a beautiful view of the wetlands down below. And that's where all that restoration work is happening along Basket Slough. So you can get like a really good view of that restoration work. And it's just pretty incredible to have the uplands, so the upland prairie and the oak savannas, and then the huge network of wetlands and the prairies. And we have a cooperative farming program of about 1,000 acres in the cooperative farming programs. We work with local farmers to raise that food for the geese that overwinter with us in the refuge. And we're one of the strongholds for streaked-horned lark, a threatened bird, endemic bird. And so if you want to see a streaked-horned lark, look for them now. They are pairing up and starting to build nests. And so it's a great time to look for streaked-horned larks right now, too. And Basket Slough has one of the largest populations of streaked-horned larks that you can find anywhere.
For those that may be unfamiliar, Sam, what the heck is a slough anyway, if you're not familiar with different types of landscapes in these terms?
A slough, it's like a feeder channel or a back channel to a larger river. And so Basket Slough, of course, all of our water here, ends up at the Willamette River. And so it's a type of wetland, and typically sloughs can be ephemeral or seasonal. And so they could sometimes dry up for part of the year, or at least go to slow flow. And so that's what our sloughs do. And our summers are really usually pretty hot and dry. And so you'll see basket slough and all of our wetland systems kind of get a little bit drier in those seasons. And that is natural and by design. And that's historically what the valley would have done too.
Interesting. Are there any projects at Basket Slough going on right now that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, and this is where I mentioned the Dusky Project, and we just spent a lot of work in the Dusky Marsh, and that's about a 98-acre marsh, and we have planted 15,000 native trees and shrubs, and we have done so much earthwork in that to restore that basket slough, because originally in the 90s we had a bunch of impoundments or essentially earthen berms or little mini dams where we thought that was the best way to create these wetlands for wildlife, and that was in like the 1990s. And since then, we've evolved our thinking in wetland science. And it's like, oh, actually, that maybe wasn't the best way to manage water and manage these wetlands. So we've been, even before those impoundments in the 90s, the basket slough was really ditched and channelized, trying to move as much water as one can, as fast as they can through an area. And so we're basically taking that ditch out, making it meander again. So I'm turning it into more of a meandering stream. So truly a whole stream restoration within this larger wetland restoration project from Morgan Reservoir all the way down through all of Basket Slough to the end of the property.
Very cool. I'm wondering, do they use fire as a land management tool at Basket Slough or any of the other refuges?
Absolutely. It is one of our best management tools. It's how the Kalapuya managed and still manage lands. And we use prescribed fire on a 3 to 5 year rotation. We just had a fire refresher on Thursday. So staff's all trained up, getting their red cards updated, and some people getting their new red cards to prepare for the fire season. And for us, it's those slow, managed, controlled, healthy burns across the landscape that just help manage the prairies. Just it's healthy for vegetation, keeps woody species out, that shades the prairies and can overtake the prairies. And so it's just one of our best landscape management tools is prescribed fire. And we have a team of three staff that help that, but it's all through partnership. So we work with the tribes and Forest Service and counties and fire districts. The benefits are amazing. So you've probably seen the smoke plumes and seen the crews out at various times of the year. Fall is our target prescribed fire season. That's historically would have ha when it would have happened in the valley, when Native Americans would have lit fires for the health and caretaking of the land.
Yeah, I can definitely echo what you said about partnerships. We're going to be partnering with the Lucky Umute Watershed Council, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, and the Confederated Tribes of Tsleil-Waututh Indians. They're going to be coming to one of our properties, which is just north of Basket Slough, for a cultural fire demonstration. Just a quick update. If you're just joining us, I'm here with Sam Bartling, Visitor Services Manager for the Willamette Valley National Wildlife Refuge Complex. And you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. Sam, now I just want to turn the focus on you and what you do in your position. You really know how to build community through the lens of the natural world, and you have the perfect personality for your position, I think, as the Visitor Services Manager. Can you talk a bit about your role and the work that you do?
A big part of what I am really trying to do is make the refuges an asset to the local communities, make them welcoming to everyone. And so a lot of my work focuses on that. Broadly, I always like to say that the work of visitor services and community engagement is to inspire love for nature, connect people to their refuges, and connect the refuges to their communities, and then create conservation heroes, which to me is like getting people to the action part of things, and that can be all different forms. It's like, planting those native plants or, voting, volunteering, just those small actions in your life that all lead towards conservation and support of the natural world. So those are kind of those three big things, overarching goals of what I try to do. And again, just like that public lands for all, wanting to create spaces that are kind of foster a sense of belonging. I guess where I focus a lot of it then too is around that visitor experience. And so how I create that, because that's all the type of work that it's what I try to do. Those are my goals and what that actually means on the ground and what I'm doing in action. That's a big piece of this. And that's where I know you were part of Winter Wildlife Field Days, and one of our committees was well-meaning to well-doing. Because it's one thing to mean well, and it's another thing to put that into action. So some of the things that we're doing is a lot of our events are bilingual. I've had a Latino engagement program since 2015, and so I've always had a native Spanish speaker, a Latinx person on staff that has helped support so much of the work of the complex and in the communities. And so we've got any new signage is bilingual. The new Ankeny Hill Nature Center sign for the Nature Explorer area is actually in six different languages. Just those stepping stones of engagement, of being able to create spaces that give people a first experience in nature. If nature isn't something that they grew up with or are comfortable with, there's always a place to start. That could be the Nature Explorer area, kind of a giant nature playground. That could be your start, or maybe it's one of the accessible trails. Accessibility is another big one, and that is on site and also virtual and in programming. So there's lots of different levels of accessibility. And I've been trying to do more work along those realms. So there's accessibility tools on Ankeny Hill Nature Center website, ankenyhillnaturecenter.org. All the Winter Wildlife Field Days, the event was bilingual, but then also all the materials online, any PDF was fully remediated and easy for a screen reader and easy to be used for anyone that uses a screen reader. So all of that is super important for the different audiences that we're trying to reach. And our main audiences are families and the Latino community. And then also just within the disability community, it's invisible disabilities and physical ones. So that's what I was speaking to a little bit about, everything from trails and facility accessibility, but then also what we're doing in for programming and online as well, because that all matters. And when you're accessible to one part of your community, it's actually accessible for so many others. And that's it gets to that capital ALL for everyone. Yeah. And I guess the other audiences that we reach to are informal school groups or homeschoolers and clubs, everything from 4-H groups, science clubs, and things like that coming out to the refuges to visit. And formal school groups is another one, because we do a lot of field trips and environmental education at the refuges. So those are our five big audiences that we try to provide experiences for. And there's little things too. We make sure we have stools in the bathroom at the nature center so that little people can make it easier to wash their hands and their family restrooms and, they're non-gendered. I have little flowers all over the refuges that I really like in bulletin boards with little messages that have rainbow petals that say, "Todos son bienvenidos," and just everyone's welcome here. But I think that's just a subtle but hugely important message. Some people will just see that flower and go, "Oh, that's neat." Other people that really need to see that message, that just might tell somebody at the right time that this is a safe place for them to visit and be. I really hope to provide that.
Yeah, if you're listening and you haven't been to the Ankeny Hill Nature Center, you need to go right away and see all the work that Sam has put into this wonderful space. And I think that it's easy to see your love for nature and how you want to engage with your community there. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about some of the activities that go on there and how you're using the environment at the refuges as educational tools for engaging and building community.
The refuges, all of them are really great educational places, even just recreation too. So we do have hunting and fishing and wildlife photography. We're a popular place to go birding or just to see nature. I think because the refuges are places set aside for wildlife, it's where you can see wildlife up close and see things that you don't normally see in other places. We have a lot of field trips. We do bilingual field trips even. We have a bilingual preschool program at the Nature Center. So And we have our community events as well. Winter Wildlife Field Days, of course, that you mentioned, Días de Campo. And that is, we actually bring that into the community. So we're in a lot of community gathering places like city parks. We've been at great partnerships with the Parks and Recreation Departments across the Mid-Willamette Valley. And so that's hugely important, is not just what we're doing at the refuges, but what we're doing in the community and with partners. Schools, we do a lot with schools. We do a lot with those informal educators, and the homeschool crowd is a big one for us. And we even have a lot that we do within the historical and cultural education and interpretation side of things. We also have the facilities like the Ankeny Hill Nature Center, which I hope folks will go out to visit. And all the refuges are free and open every day from dawn to dusk. You can choose what how you want to do nature. I think that's what it is how do you like to do nature? You could hike, you could sit on a bench and let the wildlife come to you. Because being still a lot of times is the best way to see things and hear things. Some people just like it for peace and quiet, or it's a way to restore, feel connected. However you like to experience nature, or how you do nature, would love to provide that.
Are there any upcoming events that you want to highlight?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Winter Wildlife Field Days, of course, just ended in March, but we do keep the event material up online. So if you go to winterwildlifefieldays.org, you'll click on the activities section. And anyone that helped us with the environmental DNA project work and that science project with OSU, you'll see the results from those eDNA samples at the Winter Wildlife Field Days website. But coming up here soon at the end of the month on April 29th at the Ankeny Hill Nature Center, we're doing an Arbor Day celebration.
Yay.
And we'll be passing out free trees and shrubs, native trees and shrubs at that event. And that's will be, like I said, on April 29th from 10 to 3. And then in May, we're going to have Natural Areas Celebration Week. We're doing a wildflower walk on May 11th at 6 o'clock at William L. Finley Refuge. And so we'll have a sign up for that. Check our website and you can sign up to go on a wildflower walk. On May 13th is World Migratory Bird Day and a MODIS event at the Ankeny Hill Nature Center. And so we just love to celebrate the return of the birds and welcome them back on their way to their breeding grounds, because some stop through. And then, of course, we get a lot of birds that are just coming for the summer to hang out. So we love to welcome them back and wish them well on their journeys. And then we have a new MODIS tower.
Yes.
At the Ankeny Hill Nature Center, where we're just furthering that science of where birds go. You know, we picked up a robin through the tower and come to find out it was part of research in Vancouver, Canada, around wintering robins in the area. And they thought that the robins really didn't go very far, or were curious to see where they went or how far they went. And sure enough, one of those wintering robins from Canada loved hanging out at Ankeny National Wildlife Refuge. So it kept getting picked up by the tower on many, many days as it was just hanging around in the thickets and foraging. You can learn all about the incredible migrations of so many different species for Migratory Bird Day. So we'll have a lot of fun crafts and activities at the Ankeny Hill Nature Center on May 13th. And of course, we'll unveil, we have a kiosk, an interactive kiosk with a touch screen. And we have a volunteer that created this incredible app that you can access, and it'll be on our website as well. So you can just follow the birds. We picked up a Dunlin as well. So you can see where that shorebird flew, you know, so it came through Ankeny and then it's been hanging down in California. So it's just really neat. You can see that bird fly. So there's interactive kiosk that you can explore, plus information about all the species that is really all volunteer led. And so that's an incredible project. So you'll get to meet the folks that made that project happen and learn all about the MODIS tower and just about the incredible journeys of our birds.
You mentioned your website a couple of times. Could you tell everyone what your website is, Sam?
Yeah, we have a few. So if you were to just Google William L. Finley National Wildlife Refuge, you'll see the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service logo. It's usually one of the first websites that pops up. And you can, same thing, you can do that for Basket Slough. So pick your favorite refuge, Basket Slough National Wildlife Refuge, or William L. Finley, or Ankeny. And we also have the Ankeny Hill Nature Center website, and that one's ankenyhillnaturecenter.org.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And if you could ask the community to make one change in relation to the work that you do, what would that be, Sam?
I think it's, you know, working together to make spaces for wildlife and for people. So again, if it's just you to plant a native plant or you're leaving leaf litter on the ground for species that really need that over winter, you know, there's a lot of big
Leave the
garden clubs.
leaves.
Leave the leaves, yeah. Just again, all those actions seem little, but they mean so much for the animals that rely on that habitat during certain times of the year. Kindness matters so much, you know, and just, yeah, being that person in the world, so making space for people and wildlife.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for all that you do. I've been talking with Sam Bartling about her work and the Willamette Valley National Wildlife Refuge Complex. And I'm your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator for the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We're grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. And if you would like more information about any of these topics, please visit our website, polkswcd.com, and our Facebook page for follow-up information. Also, on our website, you'll find information about upcoming events like the litter cleanup at Basket Slough on Earth Day, April 22nd, our bird walk with the Salem Audubon Society at our property, Cornerstone, on May 6th, and our meet and greet on May 20th in PD with all of our conservation partners. Community is welcome to join us there. And if you liked what you heard here on the Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ, the third Wednesday of every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thank you for listening and your light shining.